Lauren.
And this is Crystal.
And welcome to the Fordcast.
I'm happy. This is great.
We get to talk about Harrison Ford.
The best man in the two weirdest movies this week.
Yes. So this week we are doing Crossing Over from 2009 and Extraordinary Measures from 2010.
What? And it's like those the two movies that I saw Extraordinary Measures, but I didn't.
No, I missed both of these. And I knew that Extraordinary Measures was a film, per se. Didn't really know what it was necessarily about. But I had never heard of Crossing Over till I started this podcast.
Yeah, me neither.
And it was definitely not what I thought it was going to be about.
No, I don't know. The title Crossing Over makes me think it's about a religious movie or about death.
Well, I knew
which is what I automatically thought.
I knew he was an ICE agent because I saw a picture on IMDb.
Right.
It's interesting that it's such an ensemble piece, but they obviously used him for all of the promotional stills.
Right, and he's not that big in it.
No.
And one of my least favorite characters in it.
Yeah, but I applaud what I think he was trying to do. Like, this is his part of his career that we're getting to. And I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, where I feel like he was slowly sort of realizing his place and his age, that he wasn't necessarily the lead anymore, and that he was going towards the character actor he'd always dreamed of being.
Right.
By picking parts in ensembles. And I wish that he had continued that.
Yeah, I also, they made him kind of creepy, going after all the little girls. I know he was doing it like in a caring way, but he's an attractive man that's just out of his prime that kept focusing in on the young 20-something girl.
Yeah,
it didn't make me feel comfortable.
I thought he was going to have an affair with his partner's sister, the way that they had that scene together.
Me too.
And then it just, well, they changed a lot. Okay, so here's something why we may have also not really heard of this film. It was actually filmed in 2007, and it was delayed because in the original story, his partner brother killed his sister in an honor killing.
Oh.
And there was huge controversy.
Yeah.
In fact, Sean Penn apparently filmed the scene as a border agent. I'm guessing it's a scene at the end, probably like some sort of cameo, right? I mean, I don't know, but he...
Or like the guy that finds the body?
That's what I was thinking he might have been, right?
Spoilers, if you're... I mean...
We hope you watched it.
Yeah.
we assume, you know. But I don't know what part he was supposed to play, but his agent asked for him to be pulled from the film.
Wow.
Harvey Weinstein...
Oh, God.
...is now in the news a lot. Shocking to everybody, he threatened to, if they didn't cut like half, it was a really very long movie, if they didn't cut like 30 or 20 minutes off the film, let's just say, that he was going to make it go straight to DVD.
Wow. I can't believe that they cut 30 minutes off the film.
Right?
Could you imagine? I would have not watched the end of it.
So usually what we do, we should backtrack a little bit. So usually what we do is we do a summary for people who maybe don't want to watch the film but want to sort of keep up on what's happening. Now usually Rachel does that. Do you want to do the summary or would you like me to do the summary? You can also do your own version of the summary. It can be short.
My own version of the summary would be think Crash without the awesome tie-ins and less character development.
I love that.
I feel like that is what it is, because one of my biggest takes from it is it wants to pull at your heartstrings.
Yes.
But it doesn't. It gets you almost there and then you don't care.
But only because the acting is so good.
Right.
There's so many wonderful performances, and at one point I got emotional and I went, why?
Right. There was two specific points where I was like, oh my, and it's when they're trying to take the little girl away from her siblings to send her back home with her mom.
Yeah, that girl was really good.
That was, her part was one of my favorites. And the guy who played young Kim, Justin Chan.
Oh yeah, he was good.
That part too. Oh, he's so lucky that that was the ICE agent that was there to let him go. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I guess that was kind of a short summary that didn't talk about the movie at all, just saying that it was like Crash, but...
Yeah, well, I realize that it might be hard for us to do a summary because there's so many storylines.
Yeah.
It might take us the whole podcast to explain it.
Maybe
we should go by storyline by storyline.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So, why don't we start with the least complicated, which would probably be the Jewish kid from... No, I thought he was also Australian, but then I read a summary that said he was English.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that either.
His accent was sort of going back and forth.
Yeah, yeah. But he also has a weird accent in general.
He does? Okay.
Across the Universe, the Beatles movie. Mm-hmm. He was in that and his accent is...
Has he lived all around? I don't know a lot about Jim Sturgess.
He's Irish.
Irish.
One parent's Irish.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning I thought, oh, he's American, and then he slipped. And then I thought, wait, he knows this girl. Is he also Australian?
Yeah. Maybe they met on a backpacking trip.
I was happy that Lizzie Kaplan, I love Lizzie Kaplan, was in it. I would have liked if they developed that relationship a little bit more, but I wasn't necessarily offended as a Jew, but I was like, I don't really get this storyline. Like, you're just trying to show different ways that people, I guess, beat the system.
Yeah. Oh, I guess that's probably a good. That's a great summary. Beating the system or being beaten by it. That's it.
Yeah. And so pretty much his storyline is that he is pretending to be a religious Jew as opposed to a secular Jew.
Right.
To stay in America.
Yes. Because his inn was through a Jewish school.
Yeah. That he had a job at because his manager's mother, I think, ran it or something. Right. Yeah. And he has a flirtation with Lizzie Kaplan. Right.
And he got the signed letter from her.
Yeah.
And was able to get a letter from his mom. Saying that he went to synagogue in England. And so that was his easiest way to fake it.
Yeah. And then he got a rabbi to pretend, which was a very cute. It was a cute scene.
Part. And then we made the guy put his hands over his head. Like that made me laugh.
I thought it was so cute. And I knew it. I was like, oh, he's going to let him pass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But then I thought, is the rabbi fake? I'm like, no, he's not fake. He just wants to, do a solid for another Jew, probably. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But he also confused me, too, because Josh Gad is in this movie, doing very well. Wasn't he doing an Australian accent also? What accent was Josh Gad doing? I thought he was doing Australian. So I was like, how come all his friends are Australian and he's not? Very confused.
He had a British accent in it, right?
Oh, maybe it wasn't that good.
Maybe I know he had an accent, but his character was so small and it was such a quick little ditty that I was like, I don't even, you can be friends with him.
Oh, wait,
you want.
I found it. Okay, so they cut 27 minutes from it. So I was about right. I said 25, 30, literally 27 minutes. And speaking of Harvey Weinstein, Ashley Judd is in this movie.
I love Ashley Judd.
I love her. And anyone who's not aware, what has sort of come out recently is that Ashley Judd was one of the women who refused to sleep with Harvey Weinstein. And so he blacklisted her. And this might be the movie, because this is a Weinstein movie.
Yeah.
And it was sort of very topical all of a sudden. I've always loved her. And I, just like with Mira Sorvino, I was like, oh, what happened to them? And now we know.
It's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane that that man... You know what? I'm not even going to talk about him.
No, we don't want to talk about him.
Mm-mm-mm. Ashley Judd's amazing. Double Jeopardy was one of my favorite movies growing up. Loved it. When she got framed for killing her husband, went to prison,
I've never seen it, but I know
killed her husband and was like, Double Jeopardy, can't be convicted of the same
thing. Think of what movies with her that I really, really enjoyed. You have the list up because my computer's not working.
She also was in Where the Heart Is.
That's the movie with Sacha Channing.
And Natalie Portman.
Oh, that's right.
The Walmart baby.
Aw.
But Ashley Judd, I love that Double Jeopardy is the first one that comes up for her.
And here's the thing. She does, her storyline is so nothing that you don't really get to see how versatile she is.
She cries a lot.
She does. And smiles a lot. Yeah. But there was no real, I didn't really get the connection between her and the kid that she wanted to adopt. Like, it was very trite to me. It was all really about her husband's storyline.
Oh. Well, isn't it always about the men? Which, by the way, when Ray Liotta's face came up, the first thing I thought was, please don't be a scumbag.
It's Ray Liotta.
And 3 seconds later, I was like, you're a scumbag.
If anyone is not familiar with Ray Liotta, his big thing was originally Goodfellas.
Right. And then Scumbag. And and what was the one with Oprah?
He was in a movie with Oprah?
Yeah, I think him and Oprah were in love.
Well, you look for that. I'm going to talk about something as well. So in Harrison Ford's career at the time, we're sort of jumping around, but I found out that he, in 2009, he was number 17 on the Forbes list of the Celebrity 100 because he was paid $65 million. I'm guessing that that's probably was Indiana Jones, but that may also be his ask. Until last year, Ford had largely stepped out of the limelight, appearing in only 4 films since 2000. Then came the 4th installment of Indiana Jones franchise in May 2008. The movie grossed $787 million at the worldwide box office, to which Ford split a large chunk of the movie with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas.
Oh my God. I'm an idiot. When I started searching for this, I immediately searched Ray Liotta and Whoopi Goldberg because I meant to say Whoopi Goldberg and not Oprah. That's why I was like, what the heck movie is that? Karina.
I love Karina so much.
He plays a good guy in that.
He does. Guys, go rent Karina. It is such a good movie. The 90s. I miss the 90s.
Wasn't Oprah. I knew it was freaking Whoopi. Yeah, me too. Those are just good movies.
They don't make pants. These sort of like... And it's not necessarily, I guess it's a little romantic of a comedy, but it's not, that's not the whole point of it. I don't want to give anything away. But these sort of 90s movies that, which actually, let's save this discussion for Extraordinary Measures, because I think, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the easiest storyline.
This movie also was produced by Frank Marshall of Kennedy Marshall, mm-hmm. and very good friends with Harrison Ford, directed by Wayne Kramer and written by Wayne Kramer, who did The Cooler. It came out February 27th, 2009, which is the day we're recording this. I mean, not in 2009.
Oh, I was
today's the 27th.
Are you? My brain was like,
time travelers.
We went back in time.
Time travelers.
We crossed over to the past.
That's hilarious. I think that I didn't put a comma in there somewhere where I should have.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
Who needs a comma?
That's right. It's a visual comma.
Yeah. We know it's there.
So maybe we should just quickly talk about Harrison Ford in this film. So yeah, it feels like this movie is trying to be like Crash. That was my big thought. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he doesn't really do much. Harrison Ford needs a good director. And he does. I don't see, and when I say that, I mean someone that he gets along with and who gets him. And that can be rare. And I think maybe this director didn't get him because I feel like he's better than this.
He didn't have the lines to work with.
Yeah.
And he's good at weird one-liner, silly lines. He excels at those. And in this movie, he had a lot of mundane dialogue and was just problem-solving the whole time. He was trying to solve everyone else's problems. And we never got a rounded-out version. His character didn't grow. So we didn't... And that's the problem with most of the characters in this movie. We didn't see them get... like escalate or get better. We saw a lot of them get worse, but there was no they were flat.
I know the nature of the film was supposed to be about people trying to buck the system, but it felt like he was like the righteous white guy and all these other characters were criminals.
Yeah.
Whether they meant to or not. I mean, yes, we have the actress and Ray Liotta's character.
Yuck.
I didn't have a problem. I know some of the reviews had a problem with the gratuitous nudity. It's interesting.
It was just boobs.
With her, I felt like, okay, well, this is trying to show the extent of their relationship and also, like, what about her is taking his interest. Like, right. She's so gorgeous. Not that you need to show her naked.
Yeah, but shows her vulnerability.
Exactly, that too, and how raw it was and how open she had to be. My issue was with the sister. I didn't think she had to be completely naked when she was killed.
Right.
That felt like, what's the point?
Right.
You could have come in and seen them, like, having sex.
We also didn't even need to see the murder.
Yeah, that too. But I'm betting you that had to do with some of the reshoots, maybe.
Right.
I'm guessing what they probably did was when he's telling her, because it's all flashback and it's like, they probably redid the audio.
Right. And they actually filmed the thing and they were like, well, I guess we should use this.
And then him coming and saying, oh, it was an accident, I didn't mean to do it. So they probably turned into sort of some flashback thing.
Yeah, but you didn't need it. All you needed was Harrison Ford, who was a detective, apparently, in the police force, doing their work.
And going in the public and sitting next to the guy who didn't run away when he's like, they're talking about me. I should leave. He just sat there and listened to his brother confess that his other brother...
Well, they're all about respect of the family, and it is disrespectful for you to get up and your dad's about to be nationalized.
Okay, all right.
Which I always want to say neutralized, but that's not what it is. I have to remind myself.
But my biggest issue was with, and I forget her name, but the beautiful young actress who played the Pakistani girl.
Oh, yes.
What was her name?
In the movie, it was Taslima. Mm-hmm. I think it's Summer Bishil, I think is how you say it. Okay. B-I-S-H-I-L.
Again, Bishil. Great acting in this film. Is her whole speech at the beginning, I was told to write this essay. I thought that it was so offensive. And I'm not saying that she was being offensive. I just felt like there's no nuance in this.
Mm-mm.
Like, how could she not think this is what she's doing? And because of her acting, I believed that she didn't believe any of that. But that's not the argument.
Right.
That's not the argument she was making. It was written... by someone who didn't understand the argument.
By an adult that doesn't have a passion in it and is writing down the words that he thinks will trigger someone.
Yeah, but it does. But therefore, it didn't make sense in the narrative at all. And it, so that's the beginning of the movie, and I'm ready. I'm pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. It should be nuanced.
And she should know better. That was my big thing. Yeah, that was. She's a smart girl.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell she went into that thinking that was an okay thing to do. And that was the first thing that made it, especially
post 9/11. Yeah, it just seemed unbelievable to me.
I don't think she would do that to her family.
No.
And that was so hard. And the teacher, another thing that bothered me with this scene, the teacher had no control over students.
Yeah.
That whole scene was unbelievable to me.
It was, maybe it was because it was so close after 9/11 and so many people just didn't understand the plight of what many Muslims were going through, because this is a white man who wrote this.
Right.
But I was so taken out of it. I was like, I do not believe this at all. Of course they're going to think this is what she thinks.
Right. I think that they could have done it so that the little girl, so instead of having this speech where she pretty much defends them,
mm-hmm.
makes an offhanded comment on how she's going to, like, murder someone or something. And that triggers them to investigate her.
And then all of her research that she did on her project. And that would make sense. Yeah.
Because that would show how scared people can get over something that doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
It could even be like an offhanded comment where she was like, I wish you were dead, or I wish you were in the towers, or like something like that, where it's like,
I still think that it could have been an argument about that she understands where they're coming from, but doesn't agree, which she semi says, but that's not the crux of what she's saying.
Barely.
Yeah, but I agree with you. It was like, it was unbelievable because she knew better, and based on the acting, because the actors probably knew this didn't make any sense. I see why this was controversial, and I see why it was buried.
Right.
Which is sad, because it could have been something interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. That's one of my biggest takes from that, was I can't imagine, I can't, because I don't know, living in fear of being deported for every little thing you do and needing to keep your head down like that.
That's the thing. This film is so timely today, if it could be about what it's supposed to be about.
Right. I want to write it again. I want to do it again. I want to take out 4 storylines.
Okay, which storylines would you take out?
Oh, I would take out the woman that dies at the end, whose body's found. I would just get rid of that. Maria, I don't remember. That's why I think she should be taken out. I don't even remember her name.
Mm-hmm.
So she should get out of there. I wouldn't mind, honestly, the sister that gets shot could take that whole storyline. We don't even need the murder, because we don't. We can just have, and that would literally eliminate all of Harrison Ford's parts.
It would, unfortunately.
That's so funny.
And I feel like Ashley Judd didn't need to be there. We could have just, he could have just had a wife. She didn't have to be, because, again, 27 minutes were cut. We don't know where it was cut.
Yeah.
Because Ashley Judd just smiles and, like, hugs a girl. And she's like, I'm going to adopt you.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it. And I was like, what?
Or if they cut out Ray Liotta's character and Ashley Judd was the guy that hit Australian girl. This is how familiar I am with these people. Aussie girl. But then she actually helped her.
So they had an affair with her and then...
No.
So it was a lesbian affair?
So no Ray Liotta.
Oh, okay.
But instead, Ashley Judd gets hit by her.
Oh.
And then she uses her good side, not the dark side.
I love this.
To help get her green card. Because that's what she does.
It's not about having sex with her for a green card.
No. And granted, there are people that had to fail. And it could be like, she's sorry, she couldn't help her. But it sucks that the one that literally had to have sex with Ray Liotta to get her green card gets deported.
Yeah, I know. After all that. And they said that she couldn't come back for 10 years.
Yeah. Which means her movie career is over, because actresses die at 25.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. You are to retire.
You're done. You go out into pasture.
Isn't there... That's one thing. I was trying to research, but I couldn't find definite literature on it.
Uh-huh.
Where she could have gotten her studio to sponsor her, because they have sponsor visas.
Well, it's hard. I mean, I don't know all the details, but I did work for a school where we helped people. It was an acting school, and we talked to people come over. The visa that she gets, the extraordinary, the extraordinary abilities visa,
yes,
is very hard to get. And you have to show, like he said, like she'd been on a soap or something like that. Although, The fact that the cop's like, we checked your IMDb.
I know. Well, that's right.
Like, IMDb doesn't have all your credits. But it's very hard to do. Like, I remember talking to an actor who was a fencer. And he was trying to find a school that would sponsor him for extraordinary visa so that he could teach fencing. Because it was so specific.
Okay.
So, and it's been a long time since I've done this, but it's actually really, really hard to get that stuff. So if
she had been like one of the best operatic singers from Australia, yeah, she probably would have had.
Now, I don't know a lot about studio stuff, but I remember when there was this show called Outsourced on NBC, mm-hmm, and it had a lot of Pakistani actors in it. And it was a pilot first, obviously, and then it was a series, but it was canceled. And I forget how many episodes it was on. But to get these actors in it, I could be off because I didn't do research on this, but what I remember was that they got a visa for, like, let's say it's 6 years. It was a lot. So I remember the story because when the show was canceled, they still had the visa for, like, a couple more years. Again, it might not be six, but it was a lot of years because that was either how it worked, or a lot of times you sign contracts for a series for 6 to 8 years. Because here's the thing, too. I don't know if you know this, but at your final callback for a pilot, they make you sign the contract there before you go in.
Oh, wow.
So there's no negotiation, and you're a desperate actor, and then everyone who goes in for that final callback, I've had friends who've done that. They sign off their life for 6 to 8 years and then wait to see if they got it.
Jesus, God in heaven.
Yeah, so it might be that. But from what I understand from actors, because I've dealt with it and I have friends, it's a lot harder than you realize to get it done.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And they weren't really clear if the TV show was, I think it was recurring, because then she's auditioning for stuff. I don't think she gets a series regular on TV show.
No, just recurring. But they did say it's no show is better than that show. So you would think that they'd have some pull to be like, oh, we're going to sponsor her for another 2 years.
Not for recurring, no. Absolutely. If it was, yeah. Now that I think about it, yeah. Not. She'd have to be a series regular for them to do it. And if you, I've seen breakdowns and I've talked, because the school I work for, they were casting directors. So I got to talk to them like outside of class. So, you know, sort of off the record. They would talk about that they would have actors who would lie. And then they would get in trouble. And when it was found out. And you would see on casting breakdowns, like, you know, you, particularly for Law and Order, you must have a work visa for us to even see you. So it looks to me, and again, I know all the little details of it, but from my experience, you really got to be a series regular.
And she lied.
Yeah, well, didn't she?
She probably had to say that she had a working visa, too.
Yeah.
Going for a minute.
And then try to get it, yeah.
I can't. I don't understand why anyone would want to come here.
Listen.
Nowadays.
As an act, for that particular storyline, that made sense.
Right.
Because this, Hollywood, America, is mm-hmm. the movie capital of the world right now. And no matter how popular you are in your country,
you got to be here.
You got to be here to be worldwide.
Yep. It's a sad truth, and I hate it.
I hate it too.
I feel so bad because there's so many wonderful things being made, and they get one award at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. And even winning an Oscar doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make any money.
Exactly. Winning an Oscar doesn't mean anything anymore. Everyone knows that you just have to parade yourself around like a monkey for a while and then hope that people pay attention to you.
Speaking of Harvey Weinstein, he's the one that started that whole like paying the campaign thing. I mean, I'm sure it was there, but like he made it disgusting.
He's a whore. Nope, not talking about him. He doesn't deserve our voice.
Let's move on. Okay, so here's something from the... Oh, do you want to read here? Here's the New York Times review titled Thorny Path of Immigration Post 9/11. You read the top part.
Okay. When it comes to politics and the big screen, American filmmakers tend to fall into two camps, the grossly exploitative and the earnestly instructive. On the earnestly instructive side, there are well-intentioned downers and uppers, like Grand Canyon, in quotes, and their low-budget equivalents like The Visitor and Frozen River, which offer perspective lessons and tolerance. On the grossly exploitative side, there are films like Crossing Over that deliver their sanctimony with less hand-wringing and more fish-shaking, complete with lurid violence and no real narrative. Yeah. Oh, no need. No, I stopped with no real narrative because that's where it should stop. But also, complete with lurid violence and, for no real narrative reason, periodically bared female flesh. There we go.
Yeah.
There was that.
So there really aren't a lot of reviews that actually mention Harrison with anything that would be useful to us. So I thought that just was, you know, that was the consistent thoughts on the film.
Well, he didn't need to be in it.
He didn't. But here's the thing again. I applaud what he's trying to do with his career. And I feel like if it wasn't for Star Wars, he would have kept on that sort of, you know, character actor journey in ensembles.
Yeah. So, it's not my favorite Harrison movie. Not my favorite Harrison either.
Yeah, no. But I feel like there is something to be said about Harrison. Well, first of all, okay, I should say before we end. So he played Special Agent Max Brogan. Was that his name? I've forgotten. Yes. I've forgotten this movie. Yeah. So, also interesting is not nowadays, but it used to be that February was where they threw movies that they were getting rid of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they don't do it anymore. But that used to be, like, right after Oscars, would, because most movies that could be eligible would maybe go, would be come out in December and then worldwide in January.
Right.
And then there was a thing that was like, oh, February is where you throw the bad movies because you're done. But that's not a thing anymore. But I feel like in 2009, it still kind of was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But it's interesting how it's not a thing anymore, because look at Black Panther.
Yeah. And it came out Black History Month.
So oh, that's why.
That,
okay.
That needed to
happen. That makes sense. But yeah, I think it's going
to... still does kind of happen. Like, when a good movie is released after the Oscars, I'm like, what is this? What's this doing here?
Yeah, nostalgia. That everyone's touting nostalgia with Ellen Burstyn and John Hamm. And I'm like, why is it coming out after?
Yeah. Maybe because they don't want Oscars. Maybe they don't
care.
Yeah,
no one wants an Oscar.
No one... Honestly, no. I don't hear theater kids being like, when I get my... It's like, when I get my first Emmy. Everyone wants Emmys now and That's Golden Globes.
Funny. I've always wanted an Emmy my entire life. And people were like, you mean you want an Oscar? I'm like, no, I want an Emmy.
Yeah. Emmys are cool.
They're women, too.
Yeah.
And they can be a weapon. Well, I guess an Oscar title could also be a weapon.
Yeah. Emmys are very heavy.
Yes. I've told this story on my other podcast, but I haven't necessarily picked up an Emmy because I was afraid the alarm would go off. But I have felt up an Emmy. I've gone to second base with an Emmy.
Oh, my God.
I was afraid to pick it up because it was, like, in the corner of the studio that I was in. But I still wanted to be able to touch it. So I thought, oh, like a blind person, I will just, like, put my hands all around it.
You groped her.
Oh, I totally groped her.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I've picked up one in one hand and one in the other hand and curled with them.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, they're heavy. They're heavy and they're way prettier than Oscars.
I agree.
They're just... beautiful. Even a Golden Globe stick's better than the Oscar stick. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't take an Oscar if one was given to me.
Sure.
But I would feel more excited. Or even a SAG award. That would be, because then your peers like
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that'd be really emotional.
I want to be judged by my peers and found loved.
I always cry when they open up and they tell their story and then they go, I'm an actor. And it's so corny, but I just start crying. Particularly this year with Allison Janney. I was like, oh my God.
Oh, she's good.
I know. But then I also love the Kristen Bell went, I'm Kristen Bell and I am a narcissist. And I was like, yes. I died laughing. All right. So movie number two. Extraordinary Measures came out in 2010 and it is based on a true story. It came out January 22nd and it is directed by Tom Vaughn, and is written by Robert Nelson Jacobs, who was nominated for an Oscar for Chocolat for Best Adapted Screenplay, as well as a BAFTA. It is based on the book The Cure. Okay, here we go. How a father raised $100 million bucks and bucked the medical establishment in a quest to save his children. That's a really
That's
long
the name
title.
Of the title.
It's Jeez really Louise. Big. By Greta. Oh, I can't say her damn name. I'm sorry, guys. Greta
Anand.
There you go. And his character was Dr. Robert Stonehill. Here's something I have to say before we start talking. I believe that... Now, Harrison actually helped produce this film, which he has rarely done. I don't believe he has done this since K-9.
Mm-hmm. Executive producer, too.
Yeah. This, to me, is... K-19? As a character.
K-19 is a dog. K-19 Widowmaker is a movie.
Here's the funny part. In our first episode, that was the mistake that I made. I called it like K-9, and then I thought it was about a mountaintop because I was thinking of like
the K-2.
K-2, yeah. And then finally we got to it, and I was like, I was kind of right, guys.
Well, K-9 sounds right because that is something that's used way off more often than K-19.
Yeah.
And I was about to let it slide. And
I appreciate it because then it becomes a comic thing.
I love K-19.
Thank you. I know you do.
Good movie.
Yeah. So it was very emotional for me. The acting, again, the acting was really really great. But anyway, so this character of Dr. Robert Stonehill, to me, is the kind of character that I think that people think Harrison Ford is in real life.
Oh, yeah.
That he's a good old boy. Not a good old boy. That's a bad word. He's a Midwestern guy who wears jeans and tight T-shirts with, you know, very muted colors and listens to Creedence Clearwater Revival and drinks beer and
watches football, drives an old truck.
Exactly. And yells at people and is grumpy. No wonder he produced this. It's literally
like,
him.
He's like, it's me.
But here's the thing. I don't think is him. I think it's the persona that people think he is.
Right. Like, it's what he puts out there.
Yeah. They're like, this is Harrison Ford.
I bet there's an alien side of him. He unzips his Harrison suit and is just like an alien that walks around at home.
Poor Callista.
I can't picture. Well, she is too. Look at her. She doesn't even have the skin. She's just an alien. But I just don't know. I can't picture what he would be like on a personal level. Because it always seems like he's putting on an act, that grumpy man act.
I think that he plays on it. I think he knows. I'm sure that that's a part of who he is, but I think he plays it up.
Me too.
I think he plays it up because he thinks it's funny.
Uh-huh.
Because that's a thing a lot of people don't realize is he has a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I think that people don't think that they're going to get it from him. So he'll say jokes and people think he's being serious. There have been so many things where I can tell it's a joke and then people will tweet us and go, oh, no, he really meant that. I was like, no. I don't think he really meant that, guys.
Like when he couldn't remember Ryan Gosling's name.
Yeah, that was a joke.
It was the first time, I think it took him a second because it wasn't like he didn't know who he was or what his name was.
Yeah.
But I think he had to, because it happens to me all the time.
He's
I have to turn and look,
guys,
and be like, all right. But then when he kept doing it, that was his comedic timing. And it was so funny. He's funny.
He's really
which
funny.
Which is why I wonder who he actually is. Like, what is he at home? I think he's a normal, sweet guy. Like, just gets cranky sometimes. And I bet he's a joy to be married to, honestly, except when he flies because you're afraid he's going to kill
himself. Except every 20 years he finds a new wife. I did the math.
That's fine. Yeah. Yeah, they get old. He's had Callista for more than 20 years now, right?
I feel like maybe. I think it's almost 20.
Well, time's coming.
I think
there's still a chance.
There's still a chance.
Although when he went for Callista, I was like, oh, he likes skin and bones. I can't. That's not for me.
I feel like all his wives were very different, though.
Yeah.
I think he probably
just loves women.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
He's good. He can love all the women he wants.
I think that he is a man of his time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he isn't, but he's still an artist.
Yes.
And he's open. And this is so hard. Cause, like, I don't know him.
I want to know him. I just want to be friends with him.
I don't think that that's ever going to happen.
It's not ever going to happen.
And I don't mean that you're not going to ever have the chance to be friends with him. I mean, he doesn't seem like he seems very private.
Yeah, and who am I? I'm also, I don't, he and I hanging out would be like those gifs you see of a puppy freaking out on a mom that's real tired. Like the mom golden retriever is just laying there while the dog jumps around on him asking a bunch of questions. That's what I would be like, just because that's my personality. And he'd be like, you are too much. Step away.
Well, people will ask me when I what are your podcasts? And I say what they're about. And they go, oh, have you reached out to his people? And do you think he would listen? I went, I hope he never listens.
Yeah.
Why? Because he's super private. And I think that he would not really get this at all.
I don't think he'd like it.
No, he would not like it at all.
He'd be like, can you please stop digging into my movies and talking about them? Every single one of them.
Although I feel like he might appreciate the movies we don't like.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Like, well, you're being honest. You're right. That was a dog. I didn't like it. Didn't work out well.
Oh, that's not this movie. I did really like this movie.
I enjoyed this movie a lot more than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. My biggest issue with it is that it felt like a movie from the 90s,
mm-hmm.
which, as this is why I wanted to wait for this conversation, which I do have a fondness and a nostalgia for. But considering how dire this situation is, because I made the mistake of doing research before I watched it.
Okay.
It felt very sugar-coated. But then again, that's Hollywood movies, so I guess I should, like,
feel-good movies that are supposed to make you feel good.
It's Pompe disease, right?
Yes.
So these children, it is pretty much, here, I'll do it since you did the other one.
Okay.
So just sort of the gist of this film is Brendan Fraser plays a real man, John Crawley, whose two of his children out of three have Pompe disease, which we talked about. We're not doctors. We really don't know how to. But pretty much it's a buildup of sugar, right?
Yes.
So your body can't break down the sugar.
There's an enzyme missing.
Yeah. And so it almost, not necessarily atrophies, but it builds up so that you can't even move your muscles. And so these kids are in wheelchairs and they can't breathe from themselves.
Organs enlarge.
Yeah. And so he made it his life's mission to try to save his children. And he worked for Bristol Myers Squibb and was trying to find a cure for his kids because they were almost to the age in which they most children died, which is very, very sad.
Especially at 8.
Yeah.
Oof. And that's when your kid has developed a personality that you can really like.
Yeah, and from the research that I did that they don't have in the film is that most kids died at 5. Like, 8 is maybe the oldest a kid had been, you mm-hmm. know, or 9. And having to deal with these kids in these wheelchairs, and it's not as pretty as they make it in the film. But again, it's a Hollywood version. I shouldn't have done the research before I watched the movie. But there's really a beautiful relationship between him and his wife, played by Carrie Russell. There's some other really great actors in it. Jared Harris shows up at one point as sort of this, not necessarily a villain, but someone for him to buck up against, you know. And he finds out that Harrison Ford, this very cantankerous doctor guy, has this idea. And he promises him, oh, you just need the money? Oh, I am the president of this company, which he makes up, and we'll get the money. And they raise a good portion of the money, more than Harrison Ford thought, and they go into business together. And then they end up selling the company to a bigger company to buy them out. And the idea is that they want to develop this. And they do, which is sort of a great sort of happy ending.
There's like 18 different endings in this. And
yes, there are a lot of false endings like House. In this film. And I think because it is sort of based on a true story, but there is stuff that they definitely fudged. My understanding was he wasn't necessarily fired out of, you know, and being nice. He stepped down so his children could get through.
Right, but that scene was great. Yeah. You gotta leave it like that.
Yeah.
Because one of my favorite lines of the movie is when the guy that's gonna fire him, Brendan Fraser, is like, why did you bring that guy? And he's like, I was afraid you were gonna punch me out before.
Well, Jared Harris is such a great actor. So although funny. Sometimes his accent went off a little bit. And I was like, oh, Jared, you're so good, but no.
Yeah, or just let him have his accent.
Yeah, he didn't have to be an American.
Foreign people can be smart.
Yeah, they can go to other countries because they're sought after. Ugh. Yeah.
It made him seem like he almost had a speech impediment when his voice.
If like anyone is unaware, Jared Harris, I think most people in this country probably know him from Mad Men, I would say. Don't you agree?
Yeah. I know him as that guy that was in all of those movies that I don't realize until I see him. And I'm like, oh, that guy.
Yeah. No, he's a great actor.
He's a that guy.
And
guy.
It's obviously in his family. He's got a really great role in Benjamin Button, which is another movie you go, oh, Jared Harris. Didn't realize that was you.
I like him.
Yeah. And Brendan Fraser.
He has a good face, too.
Sort of was the 90s. I mean, this is obviously not the 90s, but this is sort of the end of. Now in the news, we know why he said that he left the business.
This poor guy. I need know. Him to catch a break.
He's so good in this movie, I think.
And he's a good guy in life. Like, yeah, he's just a good person.
Everybody says.
God, really, he's really been just shat on. Stinks.
Well, he definitely played like a certain kind of character.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And
George of the Jungle.
Oh my God, George of the Jungle. Or Encino Man. He was really good in School Ties. I didn't believe he was Jewish for 1 minute, but he was very good in that movie.
And I thought he was really good in this film. He is so good at subtle humor.
Yeah.
And just being for real funny.
And also there's that great scene where he cuts his hand, which is such a great sort of, you know, I want to say objective, but I mean like something to work against while you're doing a scene is that his hand is bleeding and it also sort of represents like what he's feeling with his kids. And then Harrison Ford, his character actually gets to do something practical as a doctor as opposed to just, you know.
Right.
So that was a really sort of beautiful scene. And
it was the first time he cared for him.
Yeah. And the scene when they tell him that he jeopardized his kids and then he goes in his office and cries.
Because all he's been doing, the whole thing was for his kids.
And then that's also the balance, I think, which is great too, is that do I spend time with my kids because they might be dying? Or do I spend time doing this at work? And he thinks he made the wrong choice. And usually I don't like when someone just cries because most people in life don't want to cry. Now, yes, he's in private. So that's a little bit different. But most of the time you're fighting against it, even when you're in private.
Yes.
But that scene worked for me because it's about his kids. There's something I realized when
they didn't do a close-up.
Yes, they didn't do a close-up.
Never. As soon as you do a close-up on someone's crying, because crying is the loneliest, emptiest feeling in the world, and the further away the camera is for that, the more you feel it. He was in a lone, dark, like a not even dark, a dimly lit room on the ground by himself.
There's something about me with parents trying to save their kids or mm-hmm. feeling most for their kids. And so I made the mistake of watching this movie on the subway. And I am like every second, as soon as it started, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe
this. And this is why I'm really glad that these two movies are put together, because Crossing Over wanted to pull at your heartstrings.
Yes.
And then Extraordinary Measures did. And effortlessly.
Yeah. And I feel like if you're a Harrison Ford fan, this is the purest Harrison Ford that you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And that it's a great movie for him. He doesn't actually point, which I give him credit for. But he has scenes in which he would normally point because he's upset and he's yelling, don't tell me what to do, and blah, blah, blah. And then I found out that he's supposed to be based on William Canfield. Mm-hmm. But then I read the New York Times review that it's a composite character, which makes more sense because yes. it's just Harrison Ford. Because at first I was like, that guy's nothing like this. The cantankerous stuff felt like it was like added for conflict reasons, right. you know? But it's really like, it's him being classic Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he, and because the character that he's playing, the real life person, was actually, you know, a bunch of people all put together. One of them could have been like that.
Yeah, you never know. But I didn't know that until after I saw it. Angry scientists are the best. This is, again, it's not even just the kind of character that you think, this is what people think Harrison Ford is really like. It's whereas last time, he wasn't really believable, you weren't here for that, but for Firewall, for example, mm-hmm. where he's not really believable as a tech guy, mm-hmm. you believe him as a scientist / doctor on the cutting edge.
Oh, yeah. Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Duh.
Like, this is, like, the perfect part. He's playing a doctor. He's cantankerous. He's smarter than everybody. He doesn't want to deal with bullshit.
But then he does. And he does so... One thing I really like about this character is that when they argue... And Brendan Fraser makes a point. Harrison Ford takes it and runs with it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like stay huffy and puffy. He immediately, his pride, he has pride in his work, but not pride in it as a, like being wrong.
Yeah.
So don't mess with his work. But when he knows he's wrong, he's more than willing
and
to
admit
it.
And I think he likes the guy. Yeah. You know, I realize that, you know, with Rachel, there are so many characters in Harrison Ford's career, filmography, with the name, it has the name Rachel in it.
Yes.
There are no Laurens. And I thought the closest that I'm ever going to get is him calling Brendan Fraser Jersey.
That's so funny. Yep.
I was like, that's my nickname. That's the closest I'm going to get to like my name being like in a Harrison Ford movie.
Yeah. I got Crystal Skull.
Yeah. So you got that. I have nothing.
And I like it. I love the way his mouth wraps around that. Let me tell you.
I mean, there's still time, but considering that Harrison Ford is just on his farewell track around the filmography, I don't think it's going to happen.
Fingers crossed. It might.
Maybe there's a Lauren in the new Indiana Jones.
Maybe.
Maybe.
That's a good name.
It's fine. I'm okay with it. It's fine.
Or maybe there will be a thing where he's like, all this Lauren crap, like lore. Like,
oh.
Maybe he'll use lore and draw it together with
Lauren. Still holding out hope. Cramp.
We'll edit together him saying it.
It's funny to me to see Carrie Russell in this because I was never, well, I shouldn't say that. I never had a huge opinion on her. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. And now I'm a huge fan of The Americans. It's one of my favorite shows.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's so good. And she's great in it.
So I loved her in Waitress.
Oh, I forgot. You know what? Waitress, she is great in Waitress. You're right.
So good.
I have not seen it in years.
Oh my God. Did you see Broadway?
I did.
That one was.
Here's the issue with that film. Just to sidetrack a little bit, but when the woman who wrote it and starred in it, she was killed, it was very emotional for me. Not that I was a huge fan of hers. I definitely recognized her from tons of 80s movies. But the way that she was murdered in New York City as a working actress and just standing up for herself as a New Yorker really freaked me
out. Wait, what?
Do you not know how she was killed?
Who?
The woman who... Okay, so the actress in Waitress who plays one of the younger one, the younger waitress, or her friend waitress. I haven't seen it in so long.
In the play?
No, in the movie.
In the movie. Oh my God. I do know what you're talking about.
Yes, I can't think of her name right now. I'm sorry that I can't think of her name.
Well, I'll look it up.
Look it up. Because she was Shelley. Adrian Shelley. Or Shelley Adrian?
I'll look it up.
Adrian Shelley. And I'm not going to mention on the show what happened to her. You guys can look that up because it's just really horrible. But so it was hard for me to watch Waitress because the movie came out like right after it happened.
Yes, I do. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But anyway, guys, watch The Americans. And the kids are good. the kids are cute.
The kids are really cute.
But they're too cute because Pompe disease is really scary and it doesn't look that cute.
They can't show it.
Yeah, I guess they really physically can. They can't. Yeah, you're right.
Also, it would take away, only because of how crazy and how just absolutely heartbreaking it is.
It is heartbreaking.
It would take away from the film.
Yeah. The good news is that these kids have lived to adulthood now because, and it's not necessarily a cure. They call it a cure, but it has been very much a cure for younger babies who get it when they're younger. They were too old, unfortunately, but they've been able to live. She went to Notre Dame, I read. Like, it's really sort of beautiful.
Yeah. It's this movie, minus the fact that they had like a house style show where you think you find the cure and then you don't, and then something happens, so you think you found it again and then you don't, or not the cure, but in house they figure out what the disease is.
Yeah, yeah.
And they move on and they don't find it. And then something happens and they don't get it. They made him, the guy, think that he was gonna get the cure so many times and then it didn't. Yeah. And then it did and then it did and it did. Like, just, it was almost too much.
What was interesting is that this is the first movie from CBS Films, so Les Moonves was involved. And he had them restructure some of the scenes. So they moved a lot of the scenes into a different order when they recut it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what they did, because it didn't seem weird at all.
No.
I remember once I actually saw a opening Christmas Eve, or Christmas Day, I guess, of As Good As It Gets.
Uh-huh.
And they had taped the reels together in the wrong order.
Oh.
Because it was Christmas Eve and everyone wanted to go home. My dad, it was back when they always had, like the 90s, they would have a preview and you'd see it like 2 weeks before so you could tell all your friends. So my dad had seen a preview of it. He loved it. So he made us go see it again on Christmas Day, because it was, as Jews, we see movies on Christmas Day. Uh-huh. And he leans over and he goes, "That's not what happened next when I saw it." I was like, "Oh, maybe they did some cuts." Or, "Oh, that's weird, you know." And then it got weirder and weirder, where like he got beat up. And then he... he wasn't beat up. And then he got he gave him the dog, and then he didn't have the dog. And my dad went into the lobby and was like, "Hey, so there's something wrong with the film. It's not in the right order. We can tell." And he said, "How do you know? It just came out." He's like, "I saw a preview of it 2 weeks ago." And they had to stop it and give us our a voucher. Yeah. And then we ran into a family and we told them how we knew. And they went, "Oh, we just thought he was eccentric." Like, how did you not notice? It got so crazy after a while.
We thought we were supposed to feel how he feels his whole life. I got it.
Yeah. Obviously, that was not on purpose, but it just made me think of that.
The part that got me, the very end,
mm-hmm.
when there was, when Harrison Ford is doing his angry don't cry, then cries and smiles face.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite. It's like seeing one of your parents cry. It hurts. You're like, why is that happening?
I think sometimes he was pushing, but again, this is Harrison Ford being Harrison Ford, so I was okay about it.
I feel like he would have to push to get tears out, though. Just that character. Oh, not the cheering.
No, I meant when he was yelling and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. But that's even when he's having, when he's doing interviews and stuff.
In what way?
It seems like he's pushing his anger. It's so rare that there are movies that are only an hour 46 minutes now.
Yeah, again, sort of a bit of a 90s thing.
Oh, I miss it. I miss when movies were an hour and a half.
Yeah. Well, that's usually what, this is not a comedy, what comedies were supposed to be.
Yeah.
I have to say really quickly, the one thing that sort of bothered me was when, the way the nurses were treating them.
Which part?
So at first, at the beginning, she gets her name wrong and she's really pissed. And I'm like, look at what she's dealing with.
Oh, yeah.
And then when the one that they know interrupts them having sex, and she's upset or something. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Be more understanding. They have no time alone. You know them. You were a little early.
Yeah.
Things happen.
Just pretend you didn't see it and walk away.
Right? Yeah.
They're two married people and they're having sex. Just let them do it.
Yeah.
Let them have their time.
Like, that was one thing the movie was really good about, was showing God, it's so hard what they do. And they kept their marriage together.
So good to each other. It's a strong marriage.
Yeah.
Because littler things would make people get divorced.
Absolutely.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And the death of a child is supposed to be ridiculous on a relationship.
Yeah.
The inevitable death of a child, I can't imagine, knowing.
Oh, the scene when they think she's going to die was so hard.
And he's holding
they
her.
Have to pull, and they have to pull them, carry away,
And the way Brendan Fraser lifts up his arm so the nurse can go under it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I hope he starts working again more.
Me too.
It's sort of very timely that we're doing this movie now.
I know. I think he deserves so much more than he's getting right now.
He does.
He's such a good guy. One thing that I thought was funny is we talked earlier about how we don't know science.
No, we don't.
And this movie definitely catered to those that didn't know science because they just kept saying enzymes over and over again. And nothing, they weren't connecting any real science to it to show us anything.
Oh,
like they didn't teach us anything about it. We learned that it had to do with sugars. We learned it had to do mm-hmm. with enzymes.
No, it was really smart.
And they needed enzymes.
But that reminds me, I love the scene when they start giggling because it's working and the look on Harrison Ford's face.
That's the face I was talking about.
Oh, that's what you meant? Okay.
Yeah. Proud and excited. And yeah. That's when he's like crying, but trying to hide it. And like, that's the dad crying thing. Where you're
yeah. That was the thing too. Like you sort of feel like even though his character doesn't have kids in the movie, I kept thinking, oh, well, Harrison's a parent. Particularly when he has that line where he's like, if it was my kids, you know.
Yeah.
Also, interesting enough, did you notice who the waitress was?
Yes.
So it's Dee Wallace, mm-hmm. who's the mom from E.T.
Yes, and she
looks great.
She looks great. Her IMDb page starts out with attractive, which always makes me laugh because I'm like, did you write it? And it is so funny. Hey, I'm just going to read the first line because it Please. Made me laugh really hard. So
you can write your own IMDb. I wouldn't be surprised.
And I think she did. And she also has a billion credits.
Yeah, no, she
has 235 acting credits.
She's worked a lot.
It's crazy. So she said, this attractive, happy-go-lucky blonde actress, educated at the University of Kansas and a former ballet soloist, first broke into TV cinema screens in the mid-1970s. Her appearance in several well-remembered horror films and sci-fi films, and Dee quickly regained a cult following with fantasy film fans. That's the first sentence of her bio. It is
good for
six
her.
Lines long. There is barely any punctuation, and I know she wrote it. Attractive, happy-go-lucky, blonde actress.
Yeah, so this movie also was hard to find anyone talking about Harrison's acting, but the New York Times, A.O. Scott, Desperate Father's Plea to a Detached Scientist is the title here. The storytelling and visual style are rarely more than workmanlike. And the big scenes arrive punctually and are played with minimal nuance.
Yeah. It's a 90s movie.
Yeah.
It's a 90s inspirational
movie.
It
feels like with Firewall, where it felt like, oh, this is a movie after its time. This feels like it took a while for them to get this movie made.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like when you've seen Frisco Kid, right?
Uh-uh.
Okay. You should see it.
Yeah.
It's not a great movie, but it's great to see him with Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
But it feels like a movie from the 60s. And it's from the late, it's like 1979, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's hard. I know when we talked about it, guys. It's a lot long. It was many, many years ago that we did that one. And it's directed by a director who is older. And,
yeah.
And it's sort of interesting how at the beginning of these sort of decades, you have some directors who still have a foot in another
decade
place. Yeah, that they're not ahead of the time yet. But that being said, now looking back on it, with a nostalgia quality, I miss these kind of movies.
Yeah, simple.
Yeah. Even the glossy cinematography makes me like, aw, I want to go watch Dave now.
Yeah. There's not a filter over everything.
Yeah. Huh. And, you know, this is not a romantic comedy, but we don't really do those kind of things anymore. There are no Nora Ephron type films. It's either really gritty or superhero movies.
Yeah. When you get into the Netflix thing, you kind of get into that a little bit more, but
yeah, they don't that's make true.
Just, I can't think of any romantic comedies that I would classify from when I was younger, romantic comedies that have come out recently. Mm-mm. I also don't seek them out. So like when I think of romantic comedies, I go right back to Adam Sandler. I'm like, click, 50 dates. Or 50 dates? 50, what is it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. The one when she has amnesia?
Yeah.
50 first dates.
50 first dates. I was like, I'm forgetting a word. Like, I think about those kind of movies. Love Actually.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. What's the one with Drew Barrymore and Jimmy Kimmel? I mean, not Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, it's the one based on the
Red Sox one.
And it's based on
Fever Pitch.
And it's based on a British. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, boys.
That's based on a British book and movie as well with Colin Firth.
Well, why? Oh.
It's about Arsenal. It's about soccer. I was going to say soccer. It's about football.
It's about football.
So I realized that I know we gave it to you when you were a guest, but I was going to bring you some Haas Urban products.
Oh.
So that you could be part of the commercial. Oh my God. But of course, I left all of it at my home along with your all of your swag.
My swag.
I will bring it next time. But do you still use the lip
glide that we gave you? I do. I actually used it to almost its death.
Oh, well, then we'll bring you another one.
I had it at work.
And do you remember what kind it was?
The Chardonnay.
Oh, yes. Yep. Chardonnay is really good. I like the sangria. That's my favorite.
That's the one I did not choose. I had to pick.
Well, we'll see what we can do for you. But you guys can get 10% off if you go to haasurban.com, HAUSURBAN, and use the really hard, difficult, sorry, guys, discount code of Ford.
Oh, that's too much.
It's too much. It's too easy. It's too hard. I don't know. So is there anything about these two films that we haven't touched on?
I said everything I wanted to. My big thing with this one was the fact that they said enzymes so many times expecting it. Like, and it did. I was like, okay, enzymes, cool. You're doing science stuff. That's great. You know, you don't need to explain anymore. But it's just very clear that
I feel like this movie, I went, there's nothing wrong with this movie. It's just not great. It's not right. Lorenzo's Oil, which obviously has been compared to.
Right.
It seems like of another time.
Yeah. It's a feel good.
Yeah.
Learn about something halfway type movie.
Yeah, but had some really great people show up, and it's a feel-good story, and it's based on a true story, and there you go.
And these people are alive, doing their thing, and it's crazy.
It's great. Yay, Harrison Ford.
Good job getting rid of, or not rid of, but helping fight Pompeii.
Exactly.
Not the volcano, the disease. No one fought Pompeii.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Okay, I was worried someone wasn't keeping up.
They may have just accidentally hit the fast forward button.
Yeah.
The 10 minute.
Harrison Ford was at Pompeii.
They didn't want to listen to crossing over, so they tried to get to the end. And they're like, I've gone too far.
They crossed over to
Pompeii. The unknown Harrison Ford. So again, I applaud him for trying these two things. I think that, and I haven't had a chance to talk about Pat McQueenie. I kept wanting to talk about her, and then we just kept running out of time. And then I was like, I'll talk about her when she passes away. But that was 2005. So at some point, probably maybe next time, because we're doing Morning Glory and that's very female based. But it seems like since she passed away, he's kind of been aimless, not knowing what projects to pick.
I would 100% agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think that compounded with going with a major agency. And then probably trying to push him towards sort of more prestige projects, I mean.
Yeah, he wants to just do silly things. Just let him do whatever he wants. I want Harrison Ford to have free reign over everything.
But here's the thing. When you have, depending on who your agent is, I think I've talked about this on the show before, certain scripts may just not get to you because they go, oh, that's not for them. There are a lot of actresses who are on lists that say they were offered Titanic and they go, nope, I never read it. And then you find it was because it was submitted to their agent and they were like, no. Like, you don't read every single script. Wow. You don't have time to read every single script.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
They were like, you read for this. You're like, no, I didn't. I did not.
Oh, I didn't think it was for you.
Fired.
Seriously.
Stop trying to think of what's for me and let me do it myself.
But it makes sense. Like, you can't read everything. He's Harrison Ford. I'm sure everyone wants him to be in his damn movie.
I want him to be in my movie. I don't even have one. I'll write one.
Okay.
Send it to him.
Totally. I'm sure
me and him hanging out. And he's laying down like a golden retriever mom, and I'm just jumping all over him.
I don't think he'd be happy with that.
Yeah, you know what? He'd look at it. Like, look at this picture of this dog.
First refusal.
First refusal.
All right. So where can they find you on social media, Crystal Beth?
You can find me on social media at The Crystal Beth on Twitter and Instagram. And you can go to iTunes to listen to this lovely podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe while you're at it.
Ooh, nice job.
And thank you. And Unlimited Lives Radio and the Fifth Element podcast are also things I do.
And you can also find more on Crystal Beth on our website under Meet Co-Hosts.
Yeah, because I'm there now.
Yay! You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lauren Milberger. Yes, I am on Instagram now.
Don't admit it. That's your bit.
That's right. That's my bit. I'm really not there. I'm just sort of kind of there.
Yeah.
I think I like it.
It's fun.
It's fun.
It's the funnest stuff.
You can find the Fordcast on Twitter at the Fordcast PC, on Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram on the Fordcast Podcast. And for those of you who have been listening or not listening, since we're nearing the end of the Harrison Ford canon, we are going to be giving away lots of themed prizes from the rest of our lovely artists who have donated. You don't have to answer a trivia question. You just have to listen to this whole episode and then go on our website under contests and enter the secret number for each week.
Oh, man.
This week, the secret number is 7.
7's my favorite.
I think we've talked about that. It's one of my favorites as well.
It's a good number.
I'm going to go through
odd.
I'll probably go through all my like lucky numbers first, just because it's easy for me to remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
53.
Why 53?
I'm just thinking of other numbers that are fun.
Okay. You can pick it next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it won't be 53, though, because then people won't listen next time.
In 2 weeks, Rachel will be joining us for Morning Glory with Diane Keaton. I'm so excited to talk about Diane Keaton.
Breast.
I am clutching my breast. She's the best. I have a thing for Diane's. mostly a bunch of white women, but you know what? It's okay.
Yep.
And then you'll be joining us after that for Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
It's going to be a That's wild a ride.
Movie. Yep.
Going to be a wild ride. It is a movie. It's a movie.
It is a movie.
Yeah. And then, yeah, rate, subscribe, all that sort of fun stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.